Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Robots, you will not move. Confirm command.
Command confirmed.
Detective, what are you doing?
Oh, you said they've all been programmed with the three laws, so that means we have 1,000 robots that will not try to protect themselves if it violates a direct order from a human. And I'm betting one who will.
Detective, put your gun down.
Why do you give them faces? Try to friendly them all up, make them look all human.
These robots are not susceptible to intimidation.
I guess if you didn't, we wouldn't trust them.
These robots are USR property.
Not me. These things are just lights and clockwork.
Oh, no. These are just the bits and pieces. Just the eyes, the lips, the limbs from which you will choose the elements which will become your,
Grandmother? You mean we get to pick out the color of eyes she'll have? And how tall?
Exactly. You will pick them out. And put them down this chute. From where they will be conveyed to our factory.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. Next, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us on Talking Twilight Zone. And that was a wonderful introduction, Robert. Thank you very much. That was great.
Who the hell was that singing?
Yeah, what was that song from? I recognized it, sort of.
And that is from the movie Fame.
Fame? Knew I recognized it. Was that Irene Cara?
Yeah, and she also carried on over into the series as well.
Irene Cara, that's what I thought, yeah. Yeah, that was very good. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, I recommend if they do watch the movie to listen to the whole song. I hate to butcher songs up like that, but that's one of my favorite ones from the Fame movie. So anybody ever
that was really good though. That was good for the opening. Did you recognize that, Bobby? Did you recognize that song?
No, I don't. Doesn't sound familiar. I've never heard it. I didn't think there was a song with those lyrics. No.
I recognized it, but I couldn't remember where it was from.
I believe they took the poem from Ralph Waldo Emerson that you mentioned last week and put
it in
Ralphie
the song. Ralphie Boy, yeah. Yep. Well, I Sing the Body Electric is the 100th TC episode. So that's
Yay!
And speaking of birthdays and milestones, Robert's birthday is tomorrow. the big 5-0. Yay! Mm. Woo!
And Bobby, and yours was, what was it, a week? Week and a half ago?
I turned 50 last week, yeah.
Yeah, 50. This was a week ago. All right, we won't reveal his age, 66. We won't reveal his age, but... Ooh.
Well, Bobby, I got a message for you and me wishing us a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, sweet, sweet baby. I hope you read your storybook. Yeah, next morning, you're one.
There, Bobby. And
I'm deeply moved by that. Thank you.
And also a happy belated birthday to Rick Wall. Woo! April 6th, wasn't it?
Yep,
April 6th. Woo! Okay.
The most important people in the world were born in April, obviously.
According to what I just found out, the I Sing the Body Electric song was in a showing of Ray Bradbury's I Sing the Body Electric theatrical production in California.
Oh, no kidding. Cool. I didn't know that. Well, it was good.
I like that song.
Perfect.
Like I said, you have to listen to the whole thing next time.
Yeah. And, Robert, you see what Bear Fan Ron says about you, that you're older than half the trees in the forest.
Well, just to let you know that he's doing a special show, Lynn, or anybody that want to catch it tonight. His call ID is 60541, and he's going to play some clips from past times I've been on wherever. So anybody want to check that out.
What time is that?
Go ahead and type it for me in there in chat, Ron, and I'll relay it. It's Central Time. I can't remember it. Central Time. I'm lucky if I can remember Eastern Time.
All right. And the name of your show, too, that I want to see. All right. Well, anyway.
Okay, 9:30 p.m. Central. Thank you, Ron.
Okay. Which would be what Eastern?
10:30.
10:30.
Is that 10:30? 10:30. You're at 10:30 Eastern. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, as I was saying, I've seen the Body Electric. Well, that is the 100th Twilight Zone episode. And it's also the first and only episode written by the great Ray Bradbury. And, of course, he had submitted other stories to the series, but this was the only one that was ever used. But I've always loved Bradbury's work. I consider his novel Fahrenheit 451 to be one of the best things I've ever read. And although I enjoy watching Ray Bradbury Theater and other stories of his, you know, on the screen, I think his work is best in written form. I mean, he wrote some fabulous, fabulous stories.
Yeah, I was more into his movies more than the books. I remember The Martian Chronicles with Rock Hudson.
Oh, yeah.
And some other stuff he did.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with Lynn about Fahrenheit 451, both the book and the movie by Truffaut, but Martian Chronicles, even Ray hated it,
yeah,
to
it
be honest with you.
Definitely drawn out.
For Ray Bradbury, his stuff, I think, is best in written form. I do like some of his on-screen stuff, but I like his books the best. I really do. And Ray Bradbury Theater has some good things in it. But this particular
episode... Lynn, wasn't this the second episode where Rod comes in the middle like he did with Time Up at Last?
No, I don't think it's the second. I think it's like maybe the fourth.
The fourth? Okay.
Yeah, he did Time. Remember he did it during Walking Distance?
Okay.
And he did it during Time Enough at Last. And I think this is either the third or fourth that he did that. But I enjoyed this particular episode, to a certain extent. You know, I mean, I've stated in the past I'm not a fan of the humorous or cute zones, definitely not the humorous ones, or the cutesy ones. But this one is one of the very few exceptions. Now, don't get me wrong, I didn't love it, but it wasn't as bad as others, and I attribute the acting more than anything else to that.
And now, Mr. Serling.
With the incredible ability of giving loving supervision to your family.
Can they build a machine like a human?
I don't know.
It doesn't sound so good.
But maybe we ought to investigate. I sing the body electric.
They make a fairly convincing pitch here. It doesn't seem possible, though, to find a woman who must be 10 times better than Mother in order to seem half as good. Except, of course, in the Twilight Zone.
Basically, when a widower, and played by David White, who, and I thought he played his role fairly well, as short as it was, he decides he needs help raising his 3 young children. And his young son, shows him a magazine ad for a company called Facsimile Limited. And that company builds and sells robots for just such a purpose. He and the children, they go there and they meet the wonderfully cheerful company representative played by the very versatile Vaughn Taylor. And for some reason, I don't know, but Taylor's character, he reminded me of Willy Wonka. But instead of a chocolate factory, he's showing around this whimsical robot factory. And they build a custom robot with the representative's advice, telling them what to do. You know, they can choose the eyes and the lips and the ears and everything. And they build a robot, and the youngest daughter, Anne, who seemed fairly, not really enthusiastic, but accepting in the beginning, she decides that she's not going to accept this new robot grandmother. She wants nothing to do with her. But then she completely changes her attitude when the grandmother saves her life from a car accident and assures her that she'll never leave her or die like her mother did. And that's what Anne's problem was. She was afraid that anyone she got close to was going to die and leave her. So then everything is going very well, and the kids grow up, and they no longer need grandma because they're all going off to college. So there's this sweet emotional goodbye scene at the end, and then everyone goes their own way. So actually, the viewers, I think, are basically left to assume that the father had either died or was waiting for her in the car to drive her back to the factory, because we don't see him at the end. So they never give you any information on, you know, what happened to the father. I'm assuming he either died or went to a home or something. Who knows? But yeah, this was a sugary sweet story. And it wasn't very zone-like from diehard zoners aspect, it wasn't very zone-like, and you can't get any more zoner than I am. I mean, I'm a true diehard fan, but you know, except for the fantasy aspect of the factory, it wasn't what you would call a Twilight Zone type episode. But the factory scenes were cool. But yet I like the premise. It sort of makes you wonder what it would be like if we could go to a factory and custom order someone to our own specifications. I mean, it'd be pretty interesting, to say the least. And it also brought to mind the company from that episode, the Trade-In, New Life Corporation, where while that place didn't make robots, they did allow old and sick people to custom order the bodies and faces they wanted to transform into as they got older. And they could become young again. So, you know, the grandmom, a robot in this episode, she had feelings and emotions like a human, which also reminded me of the Lonely from season one. The robot woman in that episode also had the feelings and emotions of a human. But she met with a more tragic ending than this grandma. This grandma was just going back to the factory. And the one from The Lonely, she got shot in the face, of course. And, you know, she died. Or whatever happens to robots. So, Josephine Hutchinson, I thought she was delightful and very charming as the grandmother. And David White, he's best known as, who was a Bear fan, just pointed out, yes, as Larry Tate and Bewitched, yep. And he was good as
one of the original Mad Men, to be honest.
Yeah, him and Darren Stevens, right? Of course, but I don't like Dick York. I'm not a fan of Dick York. But he was good. He's a loving, compassionate father. And he also appeared in season one's A World of Difference, if anyone remembers that. He was the actor's manager. And all the kids did a great job, especially Veronica Cartwright. I mean, she kind of had to run the gamut of emotions in this episode, and she did it quite well. And, of course, Vaughn Taylor, he's always delightful. I mean, he was delightful as the company rep. He appeared in 5 Twilight Zone episodes, most memorably to me, at least, as the very stern and unsympathetic boss of Henry Bemis in season 1's Time Enough at Last. You, Mr. Bemis, are Arita. And he was also in season 3's Still Valley, season 4's The Incredible World of Horace Ford, and in season 5's The Self-Improvement of Salvador Ross. He's a wonderful actor. So overall, I'm giving this a rating of 2.5 above average, just because I just like the whole premise of it, the whole idea of it. But as far as being zone-like, yeah, well, not so much, but I'll make an exception in this case.
Well, you were talking about the trade ends. It's kind of sandwiched between the trade ends and the first episode of season 4, which is in his image, so it's kind of
in his image. I didn't think of that. You're right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't think it was all that bad. Bear Francis, Dick York, he's laughing. I'm not a Dick York fan, sorry. I think he actually turns my stomach, but that's just me. So anyway, I'm going to turn this over to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. thank you. I didn't have that bad of a feeling for this episode. I'm going to tell you right now, I give it a 3 out of 5 because it kind of brings up a lot of the future movies that we get later on, like AI, artificial intelligence.
It's a flesh fair. They destroy us on stage. I've been there.
What do we do?
We run now.
Come along now. Let some mecha loose to run. Any old unlicensed iron down there?
Hey, see that?
Could be a human thing.
No, he's scanning cold. No expiration date, no ID.
What's a new model doing loose and unregistered?
Sir, it's a late generation lover mecha.
Well, there's a relief from all this antique iron.
You are certain he's not a man. I wouldn't want a repeat of the Trenton incident.
Sir, he's a free-range mecha running hot.
Let's reel him in, boys. Stick the hands in the rest.
The clip I played at the beginning of the show, iRobot, Will Smith. We got the old Star Trek episodes, including the next gen with Data being an android through the whole series and the movies of that. We get the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. With the Cylons, the humanoid-like Cylons. We get Logan's Run. There was also the Logan's Run, the series with the Android Rim in that one. Also the Terminator movies and so on.
With the 1/32nd under Perry, from 21 to 27.
That's the year 2027.
And I was
assigned to this is fucking great.
The last 2 years under John Connor.
Who was the enemy again?
A computer defense system built for... built for SAC-NORAD by Cyberdyne Systems.
I see. And this computer thinks it can win by killing the mother of its enemy. Killing him, in effect, before he's even conceived. A sort of retroactive abortion?
That guy Silverman cracks me up. Last week he had this guy in there that burned his Afghan. He screwed it first, then he set it
off. Hey, shut up.
Why didn't the computer just kill Connor then? Why this elaborate scheme with the Terminator?
It had no choice. Their defense grid was smashed. We'd won. Taking out Connor then would make no difference. Skynet had to wipe out his entire existence.
Is that when you captured the lab complex and found that, what is it called? The time displacement equipment?
That's right. The Terminator had already gone through. Connor sent me to intercept and they blew the whole place.
Well, how are you supposed to get back?
I can't. Nobody goes home. Nobody else comes through.
Why were the other two women killed?
Most of the records were lost in the war. Skynet knew almost nothing about Connor's mother. Her full name, where she lived. They just knew the city. That Terminator was just being systematic.
Uh-huh. Well, let's go back to one other
Look,
thing.
Look, you have heard enough. I have answered your questions. Now I have to see Sarah Connor.
I'm afraid that's not up to me.
Talking to you.
Because I
Who is an authority here?
Please.
Shut up! You still don't get it, do you? He'll find her. That's what he does. That's all he does. You can't stop him. He'll wait for you, reach down her throat, and pull her fucking heart out.
What kind of stood out for me while watching this is how Mary Poppins-like she is in this story. If we remember, Mary Poppins, starring Julie Andrews, came out 2 years later, 1964. And pretty much the premise of that movie is a nanny who magical powers take care of the children in a banker's house. What was interesting, it was never shown that Mary Poppins was anything but human. But we know by actions that Grandma in the episode here was an android. And all the different things she was able to do, you know, she was able to hear and play back people's thoughts. She could pull marbles out of thin air in her hand and pull string out of her finger. But really, I wish they would have changed this to make her more human-like instead of trying to stress the part that she is an android. It's just the whole magical aspect of Grandma. I would like to see her as with Mary Poppins carry a bag with the stuff that she was showing the kids in that bag. Just like we get with Mary Poppins carrying the magical carpet bag.
The carpet bag, yeah.
Yeah, in the movie. And the umbrella with the talking bird head at the end there that she would always talk to there. What I brought up, too, while researching this episode was the sad note about David White and the tragedy he had in his life with the loss of his son Jonathan in 1988.
You know, I didn't know that until you posted that in your review at the group that time.
Yeah, he was 33 years old at the time. He was one of the victims of the bombing of the Pan Am Flight 103 that went down in Lockerbie, Scotland on December 31st, 1988, which is about, 24, 25 years ago, somewhere around there. He was one of 243 passengers killed in the terrorist act, including 16 crew members and 11 Lockerbie residents. So that's, you know, sad that he had that tragedy later on. It's sad when you lose a loved one like that. So I imagine it was very tough for him. But, you know, I did enjoy it. I thought it was a great 100th episode to the Twilight Zone with this one. And I'll repeat again, I give it a 3 out of 5. So, with that, I'll pass it on to Bobby. Bobby?
All right. Thank you, Robert. This is a rather odd episode, not because of anything that happens in it, but because I've spent several days, as I usually do, at the Internet Movie Database to see the reviews there and the reviews on our board back when we did it. And nobody particularly loves this episode, but nobody particularly hates it either. It's kind of in the middle. It's strange. Usually you find people are either really like something or really hate it. And even though it's not the kind of story I like, I gave it a 2.5, too, which is unusual for me. But it's just another episode that doesn't really belong on the Twilight Zone. But since we've had 11 in a row of them leading up to this, I guess I shouldn't really be surprised. It's not really bad, but it is, Lynn, I think, called it very sugary. Over at IMDb, people use another word, calling it too schmaltzy. Now, a lot of people don't know what that word means. But schmaltzy can mean maudlin expressions of sympathy or mushy. And it is indeed mushy, much too much so. It's just too sweet and too disgusting. It's hard to sit through. And I think that's the biggest problem I have with it. There's just too much of that in it. But there are some interesting parts of it, I have to say that. Especially, it starts out actually at the beginning, during the opening credits, unless I'm seeing things, and I watched it twice this past week. There are two directors for this episode, which is the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. I don't know why there are two directors listed for a 25-minute TV episode.
I didn't notice that.
It's on there. I've seen it twice.
Really?
Maybe I'm dreaming. You can look at it after the show's over. But and I went to IMDb to see why that is, and there's nothing there about it unless one quit or got sick or something. I can't imagine two directors for such a short story. It seems very odd to me.
Yeah.
What,
in
the Twilight Companion? Did it mention anything in it about it?
Nothing. No, I didn't see anything.
Wow.
No. There are some interesting parts, especially at the beginning. Of course, Bradbury always looked into the future, but he didn't get it quite right. I mean, it's interesting to see them looking around that factory and being able to choose eye color and hair color and this and the other, because you can actually do that today, but not for a robot, but for yourself. I mean, you can change the color of your eyes with contact lenses. You can change your hair. You can change almost anything. And so we don't really have robots, but things have progressed to the degree that you can now do that with people. As a matter of fact, I was watching the news the other night, and they were doing a report, because there's been a lot of reports on the news about body parts because of the terrible thing in Boston and the people who lost their legs and their arms. And they've developed a hand. It's like a robotic hand for people who don't have a hand that's more like a human hand than ever before in history. It's amazing. It can do just about everything fingers can do. It's an absolute miracle. So we do have robots in a way, but these things now can actually be attached to people. I think that one of the problems I have with this is that I don't really understand why. I know it's supposed to take someplace sometime in the future, I don't know when, but why you would automatically go for a robot to take care of your kids. Why not go for a real human being? I mean, there are people today, and surely always will be, who you can get as babysitters, companions, housekeepers, anything you need that could take care of your kids if your wife dies. And you would eliminate all that terrible resentment from Angela Cartwright's character when she says it's just a machine. I mean, that would take care of that. So it seems odd to me that you would go right away for a robot. That would not be what I would go for, even if you could pick exactly what you want. Seems rather odd. Also, I wanted to know more about her as a robot. I mean, how does she work? Does she have a battery in her, or you have to plug her in overnight to get her cranked up again? There's no talk about that. It seems kind of strange to me that we don't hear anything about that. I think the main thing I like about it, if I like about it at all, it's Angela Cartwright, who really is very good in this. She really shows a lot of anger, and it seems very and resentment. And it's very real. Of course, Angela Cartwright was around for years, and still is, of course, and she was kind of the female version of Ron Howard. You could always depend on her to do good work in whatever she was in, and she does real good work here. So they
wasn't
end up,
her sister in Lost in Space TV series?
Ron Cartwright, yeah.
Angela Cartwright.
Angela
yeah.
Cartwright, that's what I meant to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's, you know, so there's a couple of, I think, funny parts about when she first meets them, she says, "What are you going to call me?" And she suggests some names to call her, one of them being Melvina. I don't know why you would be called Melvina is beyond me. So I'm certainly glad they called her Grandma instead of Melvina. That seems very, very bizarre. The thing I find most odd about this episode really comes at the end. because this whole story goes along, and I guess about 5 or 6 years go by, considering that they're now going off to college. And when at the end of it, when she says she's going back to the factory, and she says, you don't really need me anymore because you're going your own way, they don't really have any reaction. It's hard for me to believe that after all of this, they didn't develop some sort of attachment to her. Even though she's always been a machine, they don't have any real emotion about it. It's like, well, one of them says, why do you have to go, why do you have to leave? And she explains why. But given all of the emotion at the beginning about, you know, a replacement for their mother and how they're never going to warm up to her, I don't know why there's it's so weak at the end, why they just stand there and go, oh, well, we're going off the ground. Who says they don't need her after that? I mean, what do? When you go to college, do you forget about your grandparents? You don't know them anymore? Do you write them off or what? So that seemed kind of odd to me. I mean, on a basic level, yeah, it's true. He probably doesn't need her anymore. But that seemed odd to me. The other bad part about the ending is those horrible actors who were portraying the kids of college age. This is the worst acting I've ever seen in my entire life. They just stood there like stick figures. They couldn't say anything, and the few lines they had were delivered in such a wooden manner. It just seems bizarre to me. I mean, if you're going to, you know, the kids were pretty good. But these unknown actors at the end, it looks like they took somebody who was just standing around on the side of the soundstage and had them stand there. There's absolutely no emotion whatsoever. So
I agree with you there.
They were horrible.
But they knew they were only going to be on there for like 2 minutes, though.
So. Yeah, but have some emotion. Don't just stand there like a stick. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Just grab a couple of teenagers in here. Just say something, you know?
Bobby.
Yeah?
Would you criticize all science fiction writers for not predicting cell phones? Because you said that Ray Bradbury got it wrong. There aren't any robots. Yeah, okay, fine. But
no
science fiction writer ever predicted cell phones. Ever.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I was just reading, I believe it was online, just a couple weeks ago about cell phones. Cell phones were actually invented like back in the 40s. I forget the name of the man who actually invented the portable phone. Except it was huge, and of course there was no network set up to use it. So it was really invented a very long time ago, and it took many, many years for it to come true. Would I criticize him? No. And I even said when I just said that a couple minutes ago that...
Well, you said that Bradbury got it wrong. There are no robots.
Well, what I meant to... Well, I put that wrong. What I meant to say was we don't really need robots if you want to, you know, do what he did. Choosing eye color and certain things, you can actually have real humans to change. That's how much we've progressed. No, I wouldn't criticize science fiction writers for that at all, no. And what really surprises me is that Ray Bradbury apparently submitted, as Lynn said, 4 or 5 scripts to the series.
Oh, more than that.
And this is
that.
The one that they, this is the only one they chose?
The only one, yeah.
This is the best one that they could get out of Ray Bradbury? That's hard to believe.
And I just
and
found
I can't
out.
Understand. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it astonishes me that with this 18-episode season 4 1-hour shows coming up, that they couldn't pick a Ray Bradbury one to slot into the 1-hour shows.
I would like to see the scripts that they turned down. I'm very curious about that.
Why is everybody saying they? Okay.
What do you want
to say? Let me tell you something about TV.
All right, do that.
The producer is God.
Okay, so I should have said he.
Right.
Okay. All right, that's fine. Whatever. I don't think about who
however,
running it. But...
However, I just found out the thing about the two directors and Workforce, or Lou mentioned it too, that the two directors were William Claxton.
Yeah.
And... who's the other one here? Sheldon.
James Sheridan.
James Sheldon.
Yeah.
And what's the reason?
Well, because James Sheldon originally was directing it, and they did a lot of retakes. All kinds
really?
Of retakes. Yeah, they were trying to perfect this episode so much. So Buck Horton, who was the producer, you know, said, you know, they did a lot of retakes, and they wanted to improve the episode. And so eventually, I guess Sheldon just, rid himself of it, and they brought in William Claxton to direct the retakes. And also, James Sheldon was strongly opposed to the casting of Hutchinson, Joyce Hutchinson, as the electronic grandmother, which Buck Horton very surprised, considering, you know, she was perfect for the role in his opinion. And I thought she was good in the role, too.
But that's they did why all these retakes, but in all these retakes, they didn't manage to replace those three actors at the end. That's strange. anyway, it's not, yeah, well, I say this every week, it's not really a Twilight Zone episode, but because there are robots in it, I can give it a pass on that. There's nothing scary about it, God knows. The scariest thing about it for me is that today, Veronica Cartwright is 64 years old, which makes her 5 years older today than the woman who played the grandmother, the robot, in this episode. So that's a little scary right there. I gave it 2.5 like Lynn did. I wouldn't change that any. Yeah, I mean, it must be watchable. I've seen it twice this week. But I think it's the sweet part of it is ladled on just a little too heavy. We don't have to go that far with it. And another question I would have about it is if you're going to get a robot to help raise your children, I would want them to have a more realistic view of the world. I mean, she's just too good to be true. And they're going to have to go out in the real world where they're going to meet people who aren't quite that nice and that perfect. They're going to go off to college. They're going to be mighty surprised that not everybody's like robotic grandma. So I think they should have a more realistic view of the world before they go off into it.
Right.
But it's really not that bad. Considering what we have to do on our next show, this is almost a classic episode. So I'll leave it at that. All right, Lynn, back to you.
Okay, Rick. What do you have to say about it, Rick?
All right. I don't know. I don't particularly like episodes that have, as I call it, a lot of emotional or baggage and stuff like that.
I agree.
But it was all right.
Do you think it was good for a 100th episode?
No.
Because, you know, there's always like a milestone. With these TV
they should
series
have saved to serve. They should have saved to serve man for the 100th one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Something like that.
You know, looking back, you know, hindsight is 20/20 vision. You know, you never know what's going to happen, and you know, you really can't compare things from that far back to you know, to now, because society has changed so much from then.
That's true.
But again, like everybody said, good acting. Lynn just said that they had to shoot a lot of scenes and stuff like that to get it right. I think they could have done it a little more then, because a lot of them weren't right.
So you think Disney got the idea for Mary Poppins from this Ray Bradbury story?
No, not really.
Who wrote Mary Poppins? Who wrote that?
I don't know, but that was
in the I believe Mary Poppins is an older story than.
Yeah, actually, I think it is. I think that's
the body electric from Ray Bradbury. But I don't know. I want to give it a 3, but I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a 2.5 like everybody else.
That's still above
that's
average.
Good enough.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
How about you, Lou? What did you think of it?
I think I'm going to have to dissent a little bit with you guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you great.
Okay. I would give it like 2 stars. My biggest problem with this episode, I like the first 2/3. It was that last act, the idea that love is kind of predicated on not being able to die. It's like, you know, there's that setup scene where we all know what's going to happen, and she gets in front of the car and she gets knocked down, but she survives. And all of a sudden, Veronica Cartwright's character is kind of fine with accepting her as grandma because, hey, she's not going to die like her mother did. And, you know,
and she saved her also.
But yeah, but it's weird that, you know, it's like they find out that she's going to survive. And then it's like, you know, because the biggest problem with Veronica Cartwright's character was that she was upset over the guilt or just felt bad that her mother died and left her. And she felt, you know, kind of upset about that. So the fact that she finds out.
why doesn't she care that her father's going to die one day?
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It's like the mother.
You don't even see him. He just like disappears.
Then they don't even care at the end. It's like, well, I'm leaving now. Oh, but you know, it's like it doesn't matter. She's leaving. That's like death anyway. So it's weird. It's like she's going to be disassembled. You know, it's like it just for me that was just a really bad sticking point. It's like that's the message they're sending, that love is kind of dependent on, you know, your ability to survive. And for me, that just really kind of shot it in the foot for me. I mean, it's just, the ending was just, that ending just went the wrong, for me, the wrong way. I mean, I was expecting something else. I understand what Bradbury was trying to do, I think, with the idea that, you know, robots can be human-like. You know, at the end she says she wants, you know, her wish is to have life. But for me, that whole concept, the Veronica character, Veronica Cartwright's character arc of accepting the grandmother because she'll never die in the literal sense, it just, I just was like, kind of just threw me for a loop. And I was like, I just didn't understand that concept at all.
Lou, you bring up a kind of an interesting point, because I don't know who all watches this TV series called Doctor Who that's airing right now. There was an episode that aired a couple weeks ago called Hyde, and it's about a haunted house situation. And one of the lines that the actors use in that is about love never dies, it always goes on. And I was kind of thinking that. And the showrunner and writer for Doctor Who for this season, Moffat, he seems to kind of get out of that love conquers or love solves all situation on some of the episodes he done. I don't know if Rick would agree with that or not, but I just was thinking about that when you brought that up about how love survives.
Yeah.
I don't know how Moffat feels about that, but he does know how to pick a pretty decent script sometimes.
Okay, go ahead, Lou. I didn't mean to knock you off your thing there.
Anyway, never mind. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I should, if I can interject, you know, Jerry Purnell, who's another science fiction writer, you know, a lot of science fiction writers also, this is in regards to the cell phone comment. They may not have predicted cell phones per se, but they did kind of predict, like, portable smart computers, which is what cell phones are now. I mean, I was thinking about the Jetsons with Elroy and his little TV watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the idea of having portable media devices has always been there. And, you know, the idea that they could probably communicate with others was probably thought of, just not in a direct sense like a cell phone per se. But the idea of a portable smart computer has, I think, always been around.
Oh, and your first cell phones were the car phones. Remember Canon and all those shows that always had car phones in there? Isn't that a form of cell phone during that time?
Yeah, but again, in written sci-fi and TV sci-fi, nothing.
Yeah.
But I think Jerry Purnell has a few. I mean, Jerry Purnell's always bragging about how the iPhone and the iPod are his ideas come to fruition. So I think he's referring to some of his works.
You know, Maxwell Smart and Get Smart had a cell phone.
That's right.
His shoe phone.
Never worked.
Let's not forget that.
Oh. No, wait, that's the cone of silence, wrong thing.
Yeah,
anyway.
You can't forget the shoe phone. Oh,
wait
God.
A minute, that never worked that much either.
True, too.
I was right, okay.
And that was about as big as the original cell phones were. That was gigantic.
And he kind of carried that over to Inspector Gadget. Remember how Inspector Gadget stuff wouldn't work neither?
Yeah. That's true.
By the way, Orb won the Kentucky Derby.
Who did?
Orb.
Orb?
Yep.
Was he a favorite?
Did Golden Sense come in second or third?
I couldn't watch the whole thing. I just I saw a few seconds of the race itself, and now I'm seeing the recap, and they said Orb's the winner.
Was Orb a favorite?
I believe so, yeah.
Hmm. Was he one of yours?
No.
Oh, man, you bet on 10 horses and it wasn't even one of them. Oh, Rick.
Mine was the other favorite and a couple of the underdogs.
Yeah, but you bet on 10 horses. I mean, come on. Oh, Ron. Ron said, thanks for spoiling. Stop it. Oh, we're paid $12.80 to win. Awesome.
Wow.
Thank you, T. Idaho. And thank you for joining us, T. Idaho. Very nice to see you here. And Bear Fan Ron, why are you saying that the truck scene was whacked? Because, why? Because the truck driver didn't hit and run like they would in this day and age, or what?
Now, you know what? I'm so surprised that when they hit the grandmother and she's a robot and the heaviness of a robot, that it didn't end up being like Superman. Remember how Superman would stop a truck and knocked in the radiator and all that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm surprised she didn't dent the truck or anything when it hit her.
Did anyone think that Veronica's Cartwright part in this episode was kind of a primer for her, or like a demo tape for her winning the role in The Birds? Because I think this was done right just before The Birds. And
oh,
she
really annoyed me in The Birds.
Why?
She was just such a whiny little thing.
I mean, it's
she
kind of funny.
She cries too much. She screams.
That's what I like about her. She plays the best victim. She was a victim in The Birds. She was a victim in Alien. She was a victim in Witches of Eastwick.
Who played Danny Thomas's daughter? Was that Angela Cartwright or Veronica? Because they were sisters. Danny Thomas and Make Room for Daddy was one of the Cartwrights.
I don't know.
It had to be her.
You think it was her? I think it was Angela.
Well, that goes way, way back to the 60s.
Oh, God, I don't know.
I forget. Well, it was one of the Cartwrights. I think it was Angela Cartwright, actually. I don't think it was Veronica, Bobby. I think it was Angela. I'll have to look that up anyway. But,
according to IMDb, it's Angela Cartwright.
Angela, yeah, I thought so, yeah. No, I remember, she was older when she was in The Birds. Oh, but she was just so... She cried. I mean, she was crying and screaming. It was like, shut up. The birds are coming after us because you're screaming and crying. Shut up.
Now, you have to remember, it was Hitchcock. It was Hitchcock.
Yep.
Who was the man who locked, what's her name, in the room with real birds attacking her. So maybe.
So maybe
Veronica Cartwright had a reason to be a little more scared than she should have been.
Suzanne Purset. I thought she was pretty good as a teacher.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
The birds ate her up. Yeah. She died. But Hitchcock supposedly was in love with Tippi Hedren. That's a rotten thing to do somebody you're in love with.
Oh, he was in love with any blonde that would walk
That's
in
true.
Front of him.
Anybody
what are you talking about? He felt that way about Grace Kelly and other women, too. So.
He was in love with every female actress that he worked with, according to Vivian Leigh.
And if they didn't give him the time of day, he would lock him in a room with a bunch of birds. That's what would happen.
Did any of you guys see like the Hitchcock film with Anthony Hopkins, or the one that was on HBO that was based on The Birds?
No.
No.
But you know about the Hitchcock film, right? The one with Anthony Hopkins and Helen Mirren. It's about the making of Psycho, actually. And then there was one on HBO.
The movie that you're
talking about. It came out
a couple of years ago.
It was like last year, actually, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was last year, yeah.
Oh, Bobby, you saw that, didn't you?
No, we haven't watched it yet.
You didn't see it yet?
No, we haven't watched it yet.
Oh, I thought we did.
No, it's in my
queue.
It's in my queue at Netflix.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess we didn't. Well,
I remember the time I went to Universal Studios and they had the featurette there about, well, they had the Psycho thing there at Hollywood Studios or Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida when I was there about 92, 93. And they had the films of Hitchcock set up that they had there. And I went inside to see a presentation presented by Anthony Perkins, and he talked about behind the scenes of Psycho, and especially the shower scene, which was kind of interesting.
Oh, that must have been cool. Very nice. Yeah.
Did you see the 3D birds thing? That was cool.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Oh, but that was good.
I'm talking to Robert.
No, I didn't. It almost seemed like 3D when the birds attacked the phone booth. That was kind of cool.
No. In the Hitchcock thingy in Universal.
No.
They had like a 10 or 15 minute 3D movie, and like a major part of it was the birds. It was great.
Wow. I thought you were talking about a movie. Oh, fantastic. I'd love to see that. Awesome.
Well, when I went there, they had like the thing about Murder, She Wrote was there, and I think it was the last year, they were bringing Back to the Future there, but it wasn't open till a year later, something like that, I think.
Cool.
That's how long it's been. It was back in 93, long time ago.
No, I was going to say, I was doing a little research. It looks like, I think, when they redid The Twilight Zone in the 80s, they, I don't know if Ray Bradbury wrote episodes specifically for those episodes, they just resurrected the old scripts that he had. But it looks like they did like 3 episodes of his for the new
Twilight Zone. In the 80s.
Yeah, in the 80s,
yeah.
He wants the elevator.
He did get some more...
Yeah.
Yeah, notoriety in the 80s in the TZ series, yeah.
No, not to get off topic, but were you guys fans of like the reboot of the Twilight Zone in the 80s or no?
I was not a big fan of either of the remakes, the 80s or the 2000s. They did have some decent episodes, but neither remake could hold a candle to the original. They had some decent episodes, but both did, but very few.
So you think Twilight Zone's a product of its time?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they've tried to remake it twice now, and they haven't really been very successful. I mean, the one in 2000 lasted one season, and the 80s I think was 2 seasons or a season and a half. Five. The 80s one.
Five. Yeah. The Grateful Dead theme, Twilight Zone one, yeah.
It was 5? Okay, 5. Wow. And then the 2000 was the one season, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, the one with Fort Walker.
I didn't know that the 80s
Rod
was 5.
Roll there.
No, I thought the 80s was only about 2 seasons. But it had a few decent episodes, and the 80s also had the one with Billy Mumy from, It's a Good Life.
It's still a good life, yeah.
Still a good life. That actually wasn't bad. That was one of the better of the episodes from the 80s, and that was,
I like Her Pilgrim Soul.
Which one?
Her Pilgrim Soul.
Which one was that? What was that?
That was the hologram little girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, that one wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. There were some decent ones in the 80s. The 2000 series I thought was terrible. I really couldn't take that one. But, the 1980s, there were a handful of decent ones in there.
Yeah, I remember a few of them. One had one of the Carradine, Robert Carradine, in it about the photograph, picture, camera that they find, and it brings about talking about the picture taking the soul of the Indians of the native country they were someone was taking pictures of, and they were coming out of a film or something like that. I remember that one. And
Nightcrawlers.
Yeah, and then about the planet Earth being abandoned for years, and then they come back to see that there's ghosts or shadows that was left
past. That was a good episode.
Martin Balson, I think, was in that. How are you pronouncing
Martin Balson, wasn't there also an episode of Kennedy assassination? The bullet, the silver bullet or something. I forget what the name of it was, but it had to do with the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was a pretty good episode. I can't
remember the name of it. Like I said, Nightcrawlers I liked.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the Food Critic one. I played some clips from that one on one of our shows a long time ago where Elliot Gould played a food critic and about the Chinese restaurant that he ate at.
Oh, yeah. You are dead.
That one. You are dead, yeah. That was great.
Now, I forget if it was the 80s series or the 2000s where they did a remake of After Hours with the mannequins?
That was the 80s.
Was that the 80s? That was absolutely horrible. That was horrific. I couldn't believe how bad that was. I mean, they should have just left that one alone because that was the worst, one of the worst remakes of an episode I've ever seen. And then the mannequins running through the department store or through the mall or something, and all of their limbs are falling off. I mean, oh, my God. It was just...
Lynn, I hate to interrupt it. Don't you think we should let Robert go out to dinner with his wife?
Oh, yeah, Robert. That's right, your birthday dinner. Yes, okay, well, all right. So,
well, before we go, I just want to say I think The Outer Limits did a better job on Showtime than CBS did in the 80s with rebringing Twilight Zone back. If anybody ever seen that Outer Limits remake.
I did, and I thought, yeah, I agree with you. I think that was much better.
By the way, what are you having for dinner tonight?
Texas, Brazil is where we're supposed to be going, and it's supposed to be like your meat's brought to the table when you pick out your meat.
Oh, really?
Your food and stuff like that. Yeah. It's,
never been there before?
No, this will be the first time. Julie made some reservations, and we're going to be heading out probably about an hour and a half or so, something like that.
All right. That sounds great. Awesome. Happy birthday to you. And it looks like 2 weeks from now. Oh, my.
Please.
Cavender is coming, whether we like it or not. Cavender is coming in 2 weeks.
I'll have to find some Carol Burnett clips.
Oh, I almost hate to announce that because people won't show up. But, yes, Cavender is coming. The wonderful Carol Burnett, who unfortunately had to be in this not-so-wonderful episode. And we will be talking about that for whatever it's worth, which isn't much, in about 2 weeks.
Rod Serling, creator of The Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this message. And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week on The Twilight Zone, two incredibly talented people join forces to show us what happens when an accident-prone, discombobulated lady with six thumbs and two left feet meets a hapless guardian angel who knows more about martinis than miracles. Miss Carol Burnett and Mr. Jesse White. They're the chief ingredients to a very funny stew. Next week, Cavender is coming.
All right, well, that's going to be on Saturday the 18th. So I do hope everyone will be here because even though it's a sucky episode, we'll try to make it fun.
I'm
tugging my ear already.
I don't know if I can make it or not because my brother said something about having family cookouts every weekend over the summer, so I might go and hang out with him unless we have a fight as usual, but who knows.
Well, if you do, then we understand, but if you do have a fight with him, then show up here. So I want to thank everybody for being here. Ron, as always, it's so great to see you here. Tiido, thanks for coming. And Apocalypse, it was nice to have you here. Next time you guys should just call in so we can talk to you. And Lou, thank you for being here. And
thanks.
Rick, it's great to see you again. And we'll see everybody here again in 2 weeks. Bobby and Robert and I, and hopefully Dave will be here in 2 weeks. See you all then. Have a wonderful rest of the weekend, folks. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
I'm so glad we had this time together just to have a laugh or sing. Well, whatever. Bye, everybody.